Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on the environment, our relationship, and impacts upon it. I'm Chris Cherniak. Noel Larson is away. Joining me by phone is our second guest. He's John Lynn. He's a professor at the Department of Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Utah. And he's here to talk about a study that they recently released, and also another program involving Google. John, thanks so much for joining me this morning on This Green Earth.
Of course. It's a pleasure to join you, Chris.
Hey, let's start with this wintertime air pollution study that you and several other colleagues were involved in. And as I said in the teaser, it has some interesting results to it, but it's got a lot of deep science into it. So let's take our time and start with some background on what this study involved.
Yeah, so this study was a partnership between the University of Utah, the Division of Air Quality, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA for mm-hmm. short. So what it involved was bringing a cutting-edge research airplane from NOAA to fly in our wintertime pollution. And what this allows us to really do, one of the first times, is to study the chemistry that forms our air quality problem, the pollutant during the wintertime, in real detail. So the aircraft was just filled to the brim with scientific instruments, and it studied the, for lack of a better word, chemical soup that covers us during the wintertime that I think we're all so familiar with.
Right.
Yeah. And this chemical soup involves a lot of different chemicals. And just sort of briefly a background, probably most of your listeners would know our wintertime problem is something called fine particulates, or PM2.5.
Right.
And most of the particulate matter that causes our problem in the Salt Lake area, and for that matter in along the Wasatch Front, is something called secondary. So it's actually not directly emitted from the sources, but it forms through chemistry in the atmosphere. So when you're thinking about how to improve the air quality along the Wasatch Front, you really have to have a pretty good handle on the chemical reactions that form this PM2.5. Otherwise, you could implement policies that are actually not that effective. So that was really exciting because we had all these cutting-edge instruments in the aircraft, and the plane, which is a turboprop, a small plane, but it allowed it to go in and out of the inversion layer and into different parts of the Wasatch Front, and it really gave us a new picture on what's happening.
Okay, we'll get into that a little more, but let's chat about what do you think the primary sources of these different chemicals are? Are they smokestacks? Are they vehicle related? Are they home fireplace related? Is there a sense of what the primary sources of bad air down in Salt Lake City, let's say?
Yeah. So all of the above.
Yes.
It's a really complicated picture, and what we realized is this problem involves two different chemicals, which are emitted by all of the above sources that you mentioned. So I'll just name them. One is NOx.
Nitrogen oxides.
Exactly. And then something called VOCs, which stands for volatile organic compounds.
Mm-hmm.
And probably we all have some familiarity with VOCs. It's the smell of paint, of gasoline.
Right.
Also chemical solvents. And by the way, during the summertime, there's also a lot of VOC production by trees. So it's that really nice smell of the forest that we're all familiar with when we go
really?
Hiking.
But it's
yeah.
not. But it's that's interesting. But it's not the same chemicals that would be coming out of gasoline, like benzene or toluene or.
No. It's something else that interesting. Sort of side note is that that also matters for our summertime air quality problem. And it's something that, if we have time, if I could take a few minutes, we could link summertime air quality problem to the wintertime. And that's actually one of the main contributions for this study. It provided a new chemical framework for us to think about our wintertime problem.
Mm-hmm.
But in a very well-established framework that's been established for summertime ozone. So ozone, unlike PM2.5, is our main summertime problem. And that's also true for the Wasatch Front and, in fact, for a lot of the U.S. We're definitely not alone in that.
Right.
So it's caused by, again, chemistry. But for a long time, these two chemistry problems have been thought of as separate. And in this new paper, Kerry Womack, the lead author, and us have brought the two together, and we can think about it in the same kind of way. So VOCs from the summer perform somewhat similar function chemically as the VOCs in the wintertime. But there's a big distinction in that the trees, I think we're all familiar with, are pretty dormant in the wintertime.
Right.
So they are really kind of negligible for our wintertime problem. They are significant for our summertime problem.
And so, when you say trees, John, is it more aspen? Is it more pine? Or is it all just an equal contribution from everyone?
Yeah, so one of the main emitters, one of the biggest emitters in the U.S. is actually certain kinds of oaks, and they're really active in the southeastern part of the country.
Huh.
That being said, yeah. You know, we also, our nose tells us we smell the wonderful smells when we go. So,
But like you say, John, and we're getting a little bit off track, but this is fascinating from a summer point of view. Those VOCs, those volatile organic compounds mm-hmm. emitted by trees in some concentrations, combine with or are react with sunlight, which we get a lot of during the summer. And that creates O3, a three-atom molecule of oxygen.
That's
right. That's ozone.
And NOx, too, a very important part.
Okay.
NOx, again, plays that key role in summertime ozone.
Okay. And
that's right.
Okay, so that's what's going on in the summer. You're saying in his paper that there's similar processes going on in the winter that end up forming PM2.5?
Exactly.
Okay.
And that sort of... For the atmospheric chemists, you know, people in our kind of business, that summertime ozone problem is very well understood in terms of the way to think about it.
Right.
Now we bring that framework to the wintertime, and I think that's really powerful. So now we can think about it in somewhat similar fashion. We have to change it. Instead of summertime ozone, we now call this umbrella term called total odd oxygen,
yeah,
which is kind of a mouthful, but it's ozone is just a subset of that. But we can think of the reactions forming total odd oxygen. And sometimes these reactions could form ozone. Sometimes it could really form a lot of PM2.5.
Right.
And there's actually real big contrast here in Utah. Probably a lot of your listeners have heard of the Uinta Basin problem. So in the Uinta Basin, places like Vernal, in the wintertime, they have a serious ozone problem.
Right.
And that blew all the experts' mind, actually, because no one thought in the wintertime you could have that much ozone. Because there's actually these reactions that form ozone is much more active in the summertime.
Sure.
And as I've said, the VOCs really get cranking from the trees. Big component in the summertime.
Right.
Yeah.
But out there in the winter, I mean, that's also a very active fossil fuel extraction
exactly.
activity. So you have a lot of VOCs that are being emitted, fugitive emissions, let's say, from oil wells and importantly, natural gas wells that are the kind of the precipitator.
That's right.
Ozone formation.
Yeah, so you really nailed it there. Yeah, so you're absolutely correct. So So what our paper does is actually there's a nice figure in there that contrasts or links actually. It's the same framework again with the total oxygen, combining the Uinta Basin and the Salt Lake Front, the Wasatch Front. And it's the same framework, total odd oxygen, but in one instance, because the chemistry is such, it forms wintertime ozone in the Uinta Basin. And in another instance, in Salt Lake City, it forms PM 2.5. But you can think about it in the same ways, which is really cool, actually.
Yeah. And if you just join us, or if you're still listening to us, we're speaking with Professor John Lynn. He's with the Department of Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Utah, and we're talking about a paper he's helped co-author about wintertime air pollution and some of the interesting sources of it and some of the, I guess, an interesting conclusion. Let's get to that. What surprised you about this study, then?
Yeah, so we've been talking about the two key components of PM 2.5.
Yeah.
So NOx and VOCs, okay, volatile organic compounds.
Right.
So what surprised us was how they interact. Okay, so the chemistry, in our world, we often use the adjective nonlinear.
Yep.
If you reduce one, you don't necessarily expect a proportional change in the other. Okay. So there are some instances where we find reducing NOx could actually backfire in the sense that it could create more PM 2.5.
Hmm.
And that really contrasted with what people assumed. And that assumption was based on the lack of the detailed chemistry that we had in the air. You know, so that's the difference. So now with this new frame, it looks like, at least for the Wasatch Front, it might be more beneficial to reduce VOCs first.
Okay.
Instead of NOx. Now, I should really clarify, that doesn't mean you don't want to reduce NOx in the long term, because to get the Wasatch Front in compliance with the air quality standards and to really improve our air quality, we ultimately need to reduce both.
Yes.
But in the short term, it appears to be more effective to reduce VOCs first.
And again, this is my guess, that a lot of VOCs, like you say, come from vehicles, let's say unburned fuel that comes out of the tailpipe of vehicles.
That's right.
Gasoline stations are at large. I mean, you go to fuel up, you smell fuel.
Those are VOCs.
In its raw form. And so efforts to reduce those VOCs into the atmosphere would serve better to reduce PM 2.5 formation. And that's what the interesting thing is, John. I always thought that when you say particulate matter 2.5 microns in diameter, that's a solid. But actually, this solid is formed from the combination of two gases?
Yeah, so actually, PM 2.5 can be liquid and solid,
okay,
or a mixture. It's complicated, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, so I like to, when I teach air quality to my undergrad class, I make the analogy, PM 2.5 is like an animal in a zoo.
Okay.
It could be a zebra, it could be an elephant, it could be a monkey. It's just a very broad brush term, but it's the chemistry, even the shape, is different. And then it's just anything under 2.5 microns. So they're small, but they could be 0.01 microns. They could be, you know, 0.1 micron, one micron, you know. So that's, it spans the gamut, actually.
Whereas PM 10 microns is probably a much more classic solid, soot, or something along those lines.
PM 10 includes the bigger ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, 10 microns includes often things like road dust.
Yeah.
Or our dust from the desert.
Much more observable in nature.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what is the next step with respect to this study?
Yeah, I'm sure you and many people listening will want to know what can we do about it.
Yes.
You know, with this knowledge. So that's where we can bring in the second study the Google study as well.
Okay.
So and they're really kind of, they go hand in hand, the two studies, because the aircraft, as great as it is, it provides a very zoomed out view of the Wasatch Front. You're measuring from the air. So you don't have a really detailed handle on, or granularity on, which sources are emitting what. You sort of have a valley-wide perspective, which is natural from the air.
Right.
So let's take our tailpipe emissions from our cars. They emit both VOCs and NOx. So what do you do about it? You know, because as I said earlier, you want to reduce VOCs more initially. You know, so we want to zoom in now into different parts of the valley and sample different emission sources.
Right.
And types. And that's where this second study comes in. So what we're doing, again, very exciting, is to partner with Google and a very important partner called the Environmental Defense Fund,
yes.
EDF, which yeah. funds a lot of sort of environmentally related basic research. And what we're doing is to equip Google Street View cars with air quality instruments and have these vehicles drive around all sorts of neighborhoods in the Salt Lake area to map out the pollution at pretty unprecedented scales and try to understand emissions at neighborhood scales. So now it's now really zooming and providing the other perspective that the aircraft lacked.
Wow. So they're driving around. I assume, do they just park and then collect a sample, or are they collecting samples?
No, they're just driving around.
So they're collecting samples and kind of like a line source of sample.
That's right, as it drives around. Now, they are going in, probably many people have seen this already. These are just regular SUVs equipped with something that looks like a bowling ball on top.
Yes.
And these Google Street View cars, the bowling ball contains many, many cameras pointing all sorts of directions. And those are the images that we see when we go to, like, Google Maps. So that's just standard mapping that Google does now all over the place, all over the world, in fact.
Right. But
now we're equipping it with air quality.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's taking these samples of the pollution and collecting in real time as it drives around, collecting these images.
Are they collecting it at certain times of a day, certain weeks of the year? Are they going back to the same neighborhoods
to
get temporal data?
So we designed these sampling patterns along with the EDF. And what the plan is, we have two vehicles equipped with air quality instruments. And they started driving about 3 weeks ago, and they will continue at least until the end of this year. So for the next several months, they will be going all around Salt Lake. And these are not driverless cars. They require drivers.
Yes.
So it's 8 hours a day of driving.
Wow.
But 5 days a week, potentially some weekends as well. So that's a lot of driving, and you can cover a lot of miles with this type of sampling. And we sort of selected 26 what we call polygons. Essentially, we just say, well, here's a general area, and just go out and try to drive as many streets as possible within that polygon.
I get it. So then, all right, so you collect that, bring all that data back. God, it's got to be analyzed.
That's a lot of data.
Oh, my goodness. And then you've got to do the detective work, or you've got to compile all these results. And what do you, any sense of what you might or expect to find?
Well, there's probably some sources we know about that, it's just no surprise to anyone, highways and probably refineries, airport, all the usual suspects. But I wouldn't be surprised if there are surprises. You were saying fugitive emissions, right, in the Uinta Basin. There are fugitive emissions in Salt Lake as well, in the urban landscape, I'm sure.
So right.
That's kind of what we call unknown unknowns, right? That we just we'll just see these emissions when we see them, and we will repeat drives within neighborhoods.
Yeah, and yeah. Like you say, Google, yeah. In collaboration with the Environmental Defense Fund, other groups or so, have done this in other cities, Oakland,
right.
Houston, London, et cetera. So Salt Lake City is benefiting from this this grant,
yeah,
or this opportunity.
Yeah.
That's great.
We're essentially like number four on the list, you know. So really, we're still one of the few that has this type of mapping. And what I think we're benefiting from as well is our experience with measurements and analysis of the tracks, the light rail measurements.
Right.
So we've been doing that for several years as well. In some ways, it's very similar in terms of the type of data we'll get, but it's limited on the light rail line, right? So you can't go to
right.
these neighborhoods. But in some ways, it's similar because it's also this mobile data, the line that we are sampling, sort of air quality information.
Well, we got to wrap up. Where can people go, or are these papers available to the public?
Absolutely, yeah. I think so. The paper, there's a link at the press release that Chris, I think you have. So feel free to just post that to your webpage as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think at least one link I have here is unews.utah.edu. A New View Pollution. That's the kind of the title
right.
of that link. And there may be another link to
the Google car one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so,
there's a really nice movie, actually, of the aircraft that,
yeah,
as you fly around the Wasatch Front, that I'm sure the people would be interested in.
Perfect. Well, John Lynn, professor at the Department of Environmental Atmospheric Sciences, at the University of Utah, thank you so much for chatting about this deep dive into air quality and the research you're doing down there.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you, Chris.